darling, villain. The curtain descends, everything ends. Too soon, too soon, I wait. Darling, I wait. Will you speak love to me? Speak love to me. And
although he wrote many hit shows and many hit songs like Speak Low, Kurt Weill is probably best remembered as the composer of the Threepenny Opera, and his wife, Lotta Lenya, as his muse and best interpreter. But their relationship was quite tumultuous, and that's the subject of a new musical that uses Weill's songs to tell their story. Love Music is a production of the Manhattan Theater Club. It's playing at the Biltmore Theater on West 47th Street through June 24th, although there are rumors that it may be extended again. Joining me now are its stars, Tony Award winners Donna Murphy and Michael Cerveris. They've both been nominated once again for their roles in Love Music, and I'm very pleased to welcome them both back to this show today. Hello.
Hi,
hello.
Leonard.
Great to be here.
Now,
mm-hmm.
when you think of Kurt Weill songs, you probably think of Pirate Jenny, Speak Low, Mac the Knife, September Song. A couple of his most popular songs are part of the show, but many of them are not among his best known. Was that done on purpose?
I think in certain cases, yes.
Lost in the Stars, My Ship, songs like that.
I mean, I wasn't a part of the process when Alfred and Hal were putting this together. And
that's Alfred Urey and Hal
Urey,
Prince.
Exactly. Yeah, Hal Prince and Alfred Urey. Wow. Michael might know a little bit more about that process because he had done some earlier readings of the piece.
I think Alfred and Hal mapped out the plot of the story and essentially kind of broke into scenes what incidents and events they were going to try to dramatize. And then Alfred went just trawling through reams and reams of music and found, I think he chose the songs that would dramatically make the most sense. And I think in some cases, some of the more well-known songs, it was difficult for them to function just as a dramatic piece. It would be too connected to it. And
in fact, the two I mentioned would make no sense in the show. But
right.
The 28 songs all do what songs in a musical are supposed to do, which is to further the action, further
right.
the plot,
mm-hmm.
and tell us something more about the story.
And sometimes, because they're set in a different way from what they were initially intended for the shows that they were written for, so September Song becomes a duet for Lenya and George Davis,
right.
or That's Him is sung by Weill, a male, instead of the female character that it was written for.
Now, there are 28 songs in the course of the show. Mm-hmm. That's a lot, isn't it?
It is. Some of them are quite brief and succinct, I think. And I think there are also, interestingly enough, with that much music, there also is a fair amount of chunks of the story where we are really in book world,
mm-hmm.
you know, particularly early on. While the show opens with a song, it then moves into really three scenes with a little interlude of music, a song that I sing, Berlin im Licht, which is one of the lesser known pieces. He actually wrote it. It's sort of an industrial song. He wrote it for a festival of celebrating electricity in Berlin.
Is singing in German kind of like an opera singer suddenly switching to another language? Or have you sung in German before?
I haven't sung in German. I did study German for about 3 years in high school.
Oh, so you had a
start. So ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, yeah. But there was a debate about whether or not to sing that song in German.
Mm.
To sing it partially in German, to sing it. At one point, they asked me if I thought we should sing it entirely in English, and I wanted to sing some of it in German, and
yeah.
I'm glad that we did.
Well, you're doing your roles with German accents, and
right.
it seems
yes,
it seems kind of silly to not have a little German in the
yeah. exactly.
show as well.
And David Petou as Brecht sings "Smack the Knife" in German. That's another way that a really famous song is sort of introduced in a slightly different context for an American audience. You hear it in German first before you hear it in English later.
Right.
And I think almost everybody's been amazed at how your portrayals and also David Patou's portrayal of Brecht have really captured the quality of these characters. In your case, Donna, at least the La Dolenia I know sang about three octaves below your range, and yet, just like with Frank Langella playing Richard Nixon, very quickly I forgot that you weren't La Dolenia and you became La Dolenia.
Well, it was interesting because my familiarity with Lenya really was connected to the Lenya from Threepenny, the Threepenny in 1954 at the Theatre de Lys on, which is where our show ends. And so I was as shocked as anyone else might be when I got the recordings from Hal of Lenya at 27, 28 years old. We meet her at 26 years old, and she sounded, I shouldn't say like another person, because after living with it for a few months now, I realize, you know, I really hear that connection. But she did. She sang in a lyric soprano range, and she had a very high speaking voice, which is documented in the German George Pabst film of Threepenny from 1930. I think it was 30. And so I decided that there was value in taking that journey vocally as well, because it was just the truth. I sing in the keys that she sang in at that time, and then drop it as her own voice dropped. I mean, she was a heavy smoker, and she was not a trained singer, and she was a very, by her own admission, raw singer.
And you smoke a bit in the show as well.
Yeah, which is not... I don't smoke, so you can probably tell.
Now, Hal Prince actually directed her in the original production
That's
of Cabaret,
right.
So did he give you any story? Did he tell you any stories?
He told me some wonderful stories, yeah. And things that revealed the contradictory aspects of her persona and personality. You know, she was so strong and such a survivor, and yet there was such fragility. And I remember him telling me that before a performance one evening, he was talking with her in the dressing room, and they were bantering and, oh, just, you know, it was very loose and sort of bawdy, and he put his hands on her shoulders and he could feel her trembling beneath the skin, and there was no indication of it from the outside. And, you know, he said, "Are you nervous?" She said, "Of course I'm nervous." "Are you crazy?" "Of course I'm nervous." And so, you know, they're just always those sorts of stories, and there were quite a few, which we don't really have I wouldn't want to monopolize the time now, but he really handed me pearls, because while it was an older Lenya, as were many of the interviews that I got to watch of her on tape, it was Lenya.
Now, in your case, Michael, you probably isn't all that much of a recorded... There were no films little records of Kurt Weill?
I did find at the Kurt Weill Foundation, they have collected what tiny bits exist still, and it's mostly a little bit of a film of German expatriate artists sort of having a conversation in German about being in America. So I got to see him for about 30 seconds speaking in German. And then there's a bit of a television program where I can't remember which show it was, but he's accompanying the stars of the show for a television program, and then they interview him for a bit. And it probably was 90 seconds in all, but it was enough to just get a flavor of the living being. And then also I had several recordings of his original demos and him singing. And for me, that was the real entry point into the character, just that composer's voice, because composers often are seldom really good singers, but there's something about them performing their works that tells you so much more about the genesis of it and the soul of it.
And also give you an insight into what they originally intended when they
wrote
the song.
In terms of phrasing and everything. So that was invaluable for me.
And he comes across as being very shy throughout his life, even when he's a big success. Was that something you got from those clips?
It was definitely something I got from the clips, although he's very canny and very quick-witted and very clever and funny. And clearly, even in the one interview clip, mastered very quickly the whole kind of interview sort of thing and was able to banter even with his heavily accented English. And also Alfred's script very, very clearly lays out that sort of timidity and mousiness. But in the reading that I did, I discovered that he actually was a very passionate person, something that's very clear from the music. And there was this fire and this rage that existed in him throughout and would only occasionally show up, chiefly when it was in defense of Lenya. Mm. He was never more vehement and passionate than he was when he was taking her side in a situation.
Some of the German emigres from Hitler really figured out the American thing. Billy Wilder, for example, Fritz Lang to some degree, and definitely we could say Kurt Weill, because the music that he composes here for so many hit shows that he had are really great songs for Broadway.
Absolutely. The first thing they saw when they came to town was Porgy and Bess, and it was that made him say, this is going to be my arena. This is where they're going to understand me, and I have things that I can do here.
So George Gershwin liberated him to some degree, because he also had a classical training and had ambitions. Mm-hmm. Are you the kinds of actors who want to do a lot of research about characters before you play them? Because there are people who say, look, I just look at the script and I figure it out, and I'd rather create it for myself.
I love it.
But the research? Did you read the letters that Alfred Urey based the script on?
Speak Low, yeah. That was the volume of the collection of those letters. And then I read several other biographies, Donald Spoto's biography on Lenya, and there's this book, Lenya the Legend, which I think was... It's a beautiful coffee table book, and it was initially going to be an autobiography that she was working on that never quite was completed. But most of it is her own voice, and watched and listened to what I could. I love taking in as much as I can, and I felt an obligation to do that, even though it was a clear message from Hal that he wasn't looking for an imitation but for an essence. And I like to take in as much as I can and then let that kind of simmer, and then you become the vessel through which this somehow is translated.
Well, the show suggests a lot of what happened without actually telling it explicitly. Mm-hmm. If you know the story, then even little details tell you more. But it really doesn't matter. Finally, if you watch closely, you pretty much figure out everything that happened. And
it's sort of Hal had such a connection to Lenya personally, and because that he grew up in the tail end of that. That part of Broadway history, I think he has a lot of personal stakes, so he puts those sort of little treasured little things to discover for people who will appreciate them, but it's not at all required to really appreciate the piece.
But I wondered how it affects the way you play your characters, because you know stuff.
Well, it can be difficult. Sometimes your research uncovers things that are
at odds sometimes.
If you're lucky, not useful, and if not, they're actually contradictory, and you have to sort of forget that you know things, which is why I love doing research, and I've always sort of thought of acting as a great way to have like motivated history lessons.
Exactly.
But I found on this that I just, for time reasons, I sort of worked from the script first and then filled in with research as I went along.
Well, we're not going to go over the story because people can either see the show or look it up in Wikipedia.
Ideally seeing the show.
But having done the show, do you see their relationship reflected in the music? Or does the show kind of take the music and say, hey, this, you can read this way if you wish?
It's hard because the lens that I'm viewing it through is the show and is through the Lenya character within the show. I mean, he spoke of her as being his muse for many, many years. He was clearly, a magnificent muse and wide-ranging in his talents type of musician before she ever entered his life. I don't know, Michael, what do you think?
Well, I think we several times Viola in the play says that the sound of her voice is a force of nature, or he hears her voice in every melody he composes, which is something that he actually said.
Yeah.
And I think he found in her his ideal interpreter and his ideal expressor of, you know, of his what he needed to say. And so I think,
despite all the terrible things she did to him,
and perhaps because of it, you know, it was he needed her desperately and recognized it and acknowledged it. And I think in a lot of ways, much of what he wrote was sort of for her, if not for her, the specific person, you know, for that essence.
Right.
Seems to me every show you do, Michael, takes you a little further away from your rock music roots. And here you are, Kurt Weill, going back in the history of the Great American Songbook.
Well, it's funny because my very first connection to Weill was through the Lost in the Stars anthology recording that a bunch of contemporary rock singers and modern contemporary singers, Tom Waits and a bunch of people, were on. So that was kind of my entrance to Weill. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, he is a very rock and roll kind of character in spirit. I mean, he was he and Brecht in Germany in the Weimar years were about as outrageous and tearing down the barricades as any punk character.
And I'm assuming that he was an inspiration to someone like Stephen Sondheim, and you've done your share of Sondheim.
Yeah. In fact, apparently Steve, after he saw the show, was riding home in a car with Hal Prince and said, you know, I wish I'd written that score.
<I'll>
He might have written different lyrics, he said.
But Weill did have some pretty great lyricists over the years.
So
Maxwell
good.
Anderson, for example, Bertolt Brecht. Ogden Nash wrote some of the most moving songs, Speak Low.
Yeah. I can't think of any other composer who's had the range of collaborators, which I think had a great influence also and was a tribute to his adaptability.
Well, and he sought them out
often,
range. Too. Yeah. I mean, he sought out Brecht because he had read the poems and, you know, thought this is
you're giving away the plot of the show.
I'm not saying when he
Now, we're pretty much out of time, but Donna, there's been a lot of press about some of your vocal problems in recent years. How are you doing now?
I'm doing fine. I mean,
because you'd never know it just seeing the show.
Fabulously.
I had hemorrhaged a vocal cord during Wonderful Town.
Oh, great thing for it to happen to a singer.
Second preview. Coughing. I had the flu, and I had a really bad cough and was trying to sort of, you know, cough it out during a quick change. And, you know, I came back after 5 shows, and it wasn't enough time to ever totally get 100% sort of beyond it. And so it's always been a delicate matter. I wasn't allowed to really speak about it for some time, but it's nice to be able to be free about it and say, you know what, I'm human, it happened.
It happens to athletes all the time, and they often come back too soon as well.
Yeah, you know, so, but I'm back, and I'm loving the chance to be performing again in something that I'm really proud of.
And you've won the Drama Desk Award for your performance in Love Music, or tied with
Audra
McDonald.
Yeah, that was so much fun.
Two great singers. How can you complain? Mm. Love Music received the most Drama Desk nominations with 12.
Yeah.
And you both nominated for Tonys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is scheduled to go to June 24th. Would you like to see it go longer?
Sure. I mean,
some people want to go out and do other stuff.
Well, I'd be really happy to do whatever is next too. But we're having a wonderful time with this. I guess we're already extended by going to the 24th.
Right.
And,
right.
You know. So we'll see what happens.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us to talk about Love Music, which is playing at the Biltmore Theater, 261 West 47th Street, right off of 8th Avenue, through June 24th. If you're interested in finding out about tickets, the number is 212-239-6200, or you can visit telecharge.com. And we're going to go out with a vocal from both of you, Michael Cerveris and Donna Murphy. a song that we thought would be appropriate to go out with, considering the song, Wouldn't You Like to Be on Broadway?
Wouldn't you like to be on Broadway and wear a lot of fancy clothes? Red alligator shoes, a bright gold anklet, in 17 dozen black silk hose.
Hey, kid, wouldn't you like to see your name up in the bright lights, in the bright lights that gleam and glow? Wouldn't you like to be the leading fella in my heart, but also in some Broadway show?
Wouldn't you like some personal promotion to a niche on the great white way? Wouldn't you? Hey, kid, how about it? Hey, kid, wouldn't you like to be on Broadway? So listen to me, baby. I know the way. Hey, kid, it's easy.